everybody, and welcome to the 21st episode of the Cards Podcast. I'm Ben Myers, also known as Saratoga County Sports and Cards Podcast on the servers, and our music is from bensound.com. Today, with draft mode coming up soon, I want to pass along just two card game theories about draft and limited play that I've picked up from the Limited Resources podcast, which is run by Marshall Sutcliffe. It focuses on Magic the Gathering, but I think there's two theories that they've really explored on Limited Resources that really can port over pretty well to cards and be modified for cards, and that's what our main topic is going to be today. Those theories are quadrant theory and cards that affect the battlefield. So we'll get into the details of those in just a minute. But just want to remind everybody that if they have feedback to send the podcast, send that to cardspodcast@gmail.com. And although that feedback is very much appreciated, or hit me up on the Discord servers or any of that. And then if you want to support the content or, you know, help host the podcast and all that kind of stuff, you can either support us through Patreon, which is patreon.com/cardspodcast, or become a subscriber on our Twitch stream, which is twitch.tv/cardspodcast. And then also just a little programming note here. We will have a little bit of a programming update at the end of the podcast. So you're probably going to want to stick around for that. I think hopefully we're going to be a little bit shorter this week than we have for the past couple podcasts, just because we were going over so much stuff in those last couple podcasts. But this one I think will be a little bit shorter. So there is a little bit of an announcement scheduled for the end of this one, just to let you know up front here. But what are we talking about? We're talking about Cards, which is from 1939 Games, which is a small game development studio based out of Reykjavik, Iceland. It's a free-to-play digital collectible card game set in World War II. Right now, it's in early access, and you can get more information on that or more information about draft and all that stuff coming up soon here on the Discord channel, or just go to Discord to get like game tips and strategies and deck lists and all that kind of stuff. And that can all be found through cards.com. That's K-A-R-D-S.com. And finally, the Cards Podcast is created under 1939 Games community content policy using assets owned by 1939 Games. 1939 Games does not endorse or sponsor this project. Well, but they are pretty good about helping me out. And, you know, thanks to 1939 Games for making a cool game that we can talk about every couple of weeks. So, not a lot of breaking news this week. That's public breaking news, at least. I've seen some rumor mill kind of stuff, but, you know, it's kind of all related to that draft mode thing, and they're the gears are turning in the background on draft mode. Draft mode is coming. There is testing being done. I can't share all that much about what's going on in the background, but there is work being done in the background. So draft mode is coming, which necessitates what we're going to talk about here in a little bit. But if there is any dev blog stuff, let's do our traditional, you know, couple second pause here. And this is where we'll jump in from the edit bay with draft mode. All right, so either you've heard me talk about the new draft mode, or we're just forging ahead here. And let's just get right into our main topic, which are two theories about drafting just card games in general that I think we can port over to cards pretty easily. And there are these, like I said, just these are both of these are from Limited Resources, which is a podcast by Marshall Sutcliffe. They've been doing it for years, and it focuses mostly on Magic the Gathering. But I think the general principles here we can port over pretty well to cards, and this will help, hopefully, if you've never drafted a card game before, or if you have drafted card games before, hopefully this will help sharpen your skills getting into that when draft mode does launch. So first is quadrant theory. So what quadrant theory is, if you can just imagine in your head like a piece of graph paper that you draw and you make kind of a crosshair on it, and in those four different boxes you have developing, parity, ahead, and behind. Those are the four different boxes that are on your in your mind's eye there. And those are the four quadrants of a game. And, you know, this kind of also works in constructed mode. So if you want to use these ideas for constructed cards, it also will work there. But in the four parts of every game of Cards or Magic, but in this case Cards, is there's a developing phase where both players are kind of developing their resources, those resources either being their hand or their credits available to them. And then there's usually in most games there's a parity, that part of the game where both players kind of have similar strength, either lots of units on the board or hands of similar size, that kind of thing. That's kind of parity. Then the two modes that I think are kind of people can kind of grasp the easiest are ahead or behind. Either you're ahead in the game, like you're either winning the units, right? Like you have more units on the board or you're putting pressure on your opponent, or you're behind. You're trying to stave off the attacks of an opponent, or you're trying to just catch up on credits or your hand or something like that. Being able to recognize where you are in the game is very, very important, both in draft and in constructed. But we're talking about mostly draft today. So there's a series of questions when you're drafting your deck that you want to be able to answer that can kind of tell you where your deck kind of falls along these different axes in quadrant theory, and can help you either shore up spots in your deck that are a little weak in those areas, or if you are making a real push to be ahead all the time, like you're playing a very aggressive deck, then you can recognize that and kind of double down on being aggressive or being controlling or that kind of thing. But we'll get into that all here in a second. So let me go through some of these questions that Marshall and some other hosts have put together that can kind of help guide you when you're creating your deck, you know, you're drafting your deck, you've opened the first pack, and being able to answer these questions can kind of help guide your draft choices you're going along. So question number one, when it comes to quadrant theory, is how many cards do you have that are good in the first four-ish turns of the game? So there's kind of two levels to answering this question. You can either go level one and answer this with very aggressive plays. Like if you have a lot of good cards in the game, there are a lot of cards in the game that are good on the first four turns that are very aggressive. So like stuff like German Removal is a really good example here. Like Sudden Strike, Tactical Strike, like those are very aggressive good cards that can be played in the first four-ish turns that can make a big difference later on. Anything aggressive tanks like Panzer IIAs, M8 Greyhounds, any of the Japanese infantries, Akita regiments, Mitu regiments, even stuff like Katyusha, they kind of fit into this good, that they're just very good units or very good things to be doing in the first four turns. And then you kind of get into level two. And level two is more of the defensive answers to these first four turns. What do I have in terms of defensive speed is what Marshall calls it a lot. And this means like, maybe I'm not being as aggressive attacking, but I'm being aggressive setting up my defensive units. And what do I mean by defense? I mean stuff like 5th Brigades, 84th Infantry Regiments, Takasagi Regiments. Naval Power is actually a really good card for defensive speed and kind of can help flip the game back. If your opponent is being very aggressive in the first four turns, you want to have answers defensively for those first four turns. So you kind of have two answers to this question when you're drafting your deck. I want to have cards that are good in the first four turns, and am I leaning on the aggressive style cards, you know, removal or attacking units, or am I leaning more on defensive style cards, you know, guard units, and kind of removal kind of, I guess, has a foot in both of those realms depending on what's around that removal. And we'll get into removal a little bit more when we talk about cards that affect the battlefield. Okay, so question number two is, what do you have in your deck to break up board stalls or to get you ahead in the game? And probably the best single unit that kind of answers this question is that Panzer IV F2. It helps destroy units, and it helps get you ahead of cards, or get you ahead on cards, because it's got that big beefy 5/5 body, and it's either destroying a unit when it comes down, or it's probably putting something back in the opponent's hand. So that's really good at breaking those kind of things up. But the kind of the two unit areas that answer this question really well, that really help break up board stalls or get you ahead, are bombers and artillery. B17 is another really great example of something that helps you break up board stalls or just is just a raw, powerful card that can get you ahead in the game. And a lot of artillery pieces do this too. If you you get later in the draft and you have to get just maybe limited or standard level cards, there's a lot of good British artillery that does this. The 28 centimeter coastal howitzer for the Japanese kind of fits into this. Those artillery pieces that can pick off multiple things or just bust through what your opponent's defenses they have set up. Another big part of breaking up board stalls or getting head on cards is elite units. There's a lot of really, you can name almost any elite unit and it's either going to give you card advantage or it's going to break through a board stall. Leopold, some of the other, the Pain Train, the Soviet Pain Train, you know, there's lots of different stuff that either gets you ahead on cards or breaks up board stalls. So, you know, answering these first two questions, you kind of build this as we go along in today's cast. So you have your card, you have your suite of cards that does important stuff in the first four turns. Then that's kind of the developing phase. Now, this next question addresses more of the parity phase. Okay, I'm at parity. I've built up my resources. Now I'm at parity. How do I go over the top, get more advantage? And my answer to these questions, at least when it comes to cards, is more bombers and artillery or stuff like Panzer F2s or B-17s or elites. That's kind of how you break through that parity level of the game. This next one is kind of along the same lines in terms of parity. And the question is, if both players survive to a reasonable life total and it's turns 8 to 10, do you have a good plan? So this is kind of an extension of that previous question. We're still talking about parity here. And stuff that kind of fits to answer this question are usually like card draw orders, at least in my estimation. So if both players have survived and both players are looking okay and both players have a couple units on the battlefield and like you're at parity, like you're about even strength, what breaks that parity? What gives you the advantage that pushes you over the top? And cards that came to my mind in this case were stuff like mobilization, war bonds. Even if you're looking for standard level stuff, Convoy HX-175 is really good at this. Something like Workers Unite is pretty good at this. It gives you a credit boost plus cards in your hand immediately. And then probably I think like the number one thing that can just totally like just shatter a game in your favor if you can play it is Empire of the Sun. It's expensive, but if you've gotten to that later, the kind of the mid-ish point of the game, you've gotten up to 9 credits, that can totally turn a game around in your favor if you've been able to maintain battlefield control up to that point. Another one that fits in here, carpet bombing. Like you've made your opponent overcommit to the board or the battlefield. They have multiple units with 3-ish defense and you sweep them all away. So let's keep building our arguments or our plans here in that. First, you have what's good in the first four turns. So you have stuff like Desert Rats, Sudden Strikes, either aggressive units like Panzer IIs and Akitas, or maybe more defensive units like 5th Brigades, 84th Infantries. All right, so that's the developing stage. Now, this parity part, okay, how do I break board stalls and get ahead? Bombers and artillery, Panzer F2s, B-17s, and then if both players have kind of made it to this kind of late mid-game, what's my plan? Well, my plan is I'm going to use a mobilization or an Empire of the Sun to give me a big influx of cards, or I'm going to sweep everything away with a carpet bombing. So that's kind of those first two areas. We have developing and parity. So now we have the two kind of more tangible areas. And our next question is, if you fall behind, how do you come back? So great question. What do we have at our disposal during a draft that we can say, this is my catch up from behind card? And a couple that came to my mind right away is the aforementioned carpet bombing. That helps you. That really helps you. Like that's like the quintessential catch up card. Then you have stuff like Leopold. That's kind of, you know, it's an elite, but it definitely lets you catch up from behind. Then kind of some of those smaller sweepers, Tora, 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 Winter Warfare, maybe a Code of Bushido, something like that. Those can help sweep up a lot of enemy units and catch you up from behind. But then also there's just big fat guard units that can help you catch up, like a Churchill. Like if you're playing against a very aggressive Japanese player or something like that, a Churchill by itself can almost shut them down. Or kind of the next level of that is like the Grenadier Guards for the British. Those are really good. Panzer F2s. You know, it's such an all-around good unit that it kind of can kind of help you fit in this spot as well. If you fall behind, a Panzer F2 can come down and blow something up right away or make something retreat. And then it has that big beefy body that helps you get another unit or two off the battlefield. So you need to have and we're going to kind of get into, sometimes you don't need to really worry about this question all that much, but if you're on the more controlling side, you really need to worry about this question a lot. So we'll get to that in just a second, though. So again, just to keep building our thing, we have our stuff that's good on turns 1 through 4. We have our stuff that helps us break through board stalls. We have cards that help us get over the top when it's kind of a neutral battlefield. Now, if we fall behind, we want to have some answers for that. And then our final question that we want to answer here is, when you're ahead, do you have good ways to continue to apply that pressure to your opponent? So if you're playing aggressive, you want the top of your curve to maybe be like Panzer F2, Panzer 35T, removal order, and then you want to drop a Panzer 3J. It's just a big beefcake that's going to come out there and just keep hammering on the opponent. I think Shermans are really good at this too, because you're probably going to have frontline control. So how do you continue to apply pressure? Well, you drop a Sherman, you get a card draw out of it, plus you have a 4-4 body. I think fighters really fall into this camp too. Spitfire, either flavor of Spitfire, Focke-Wulfs, Hayabusas are really good at keeping the pressure on your opponent. Once you have them on the back foot, how do you keep after them, keep hammering them? And stuff like Hayabusas, Mitu regiments, Shermans, Panzer 3Js, they all answer that question. They really help you push through the last little bit you need to get the job done. So those are our 5 questions that I wanted to go over that you really want to be able to answer when it comes to quadrant theory. So you have your developing stuff. What cards do I have that are good in the first 4 turns? Am I going to be more aggressive? Am I going to be more defensive in that area? Do I have stuff that helps me break through board stalls or get me ahead? Or if both players have kind of stabilized and the game's kind of run out, do I have stuff that puts me over the top? That's kind of your parity one. Then you have, if I'm behind, do I have stuff that helps me catch up? Maybe I don't want to be behind, but we'll touch on that in a second. But if I do fall behind, do I have stuff that helps me come back? And then if I'm ahead, do I have good ways to continue to apply that pressure and win the game? So we have developing, parity, ahead, and behind. Those are our 4 areas that we want to definitely have our deck be able to touch on in general. But, you know, this kind of leads us to now we've established these parameters, these questions we want to be answering. How does this help me when I'm sitting down to draft my deck? Well, okay, so during a draft, you want to use quadrant theory to help kind of give yourself a game plan. Am I going to be ramp? If I'm going to be a ramp deck, then I want a lot of stuff that really helps me in the developing part of the game. That's where I'm going to win the game. I'm going to be able to develop my resources better than my opponent can. And that would be a ramp deck. Parity, how do I break through parity? Well, that's probably more mid-rangey or control. I'm going to have good removal orders, and I'm going to have good 2-for-1 opportunities, and that's going to value me ahead of my opponent. Am I going to play from behind? Am I going to play a control deck? Am I going to allow my opponent to overcommit themselves and then destroy everything they have out there, kind of pick up the pieces, and then once my opponent has overcommitted, then I can come back and get past my opponent very easily once they've run out of resources of their own. And then finally, am I on a play ahead deck? Am I an aggressive deck? Should I be, you know, not worrying about falling behind, because if I fall behind, it doesn't matter. I'll have lost the game at that point. I'm going to be so aggressive, and I'm going to put myself ahead of my opponent so much that that's where I'm going to win a lot of my games. So you want to pick kind of one of those four lanes, one of those four quadrants to be where you are going to excel in the game, and that's going to give you an advantage over your opponent. You don't want to have like C-plus answers in all those four areas. You probably want to have like A-plus answers in one area, kind of B-minus to C-plus in a second, and then you can kind of be like in the D range in the other two. And then you're probably going to have a pretty good deck. You don't want to be able to answer every question kind of equally. You want to be, at least in my opinion, you want to be able to answer one question really, really well, and that is your pressure point against your opponent. With that said, sometimes the thing you're really, really good at is exactly what your opponent wants you to be really, really good at. So like if you're a very, very aggressive deck, like you build a very aggressive deck, maybe a Blitzkrieg style deck, lots of Panzer 2As and that kind of thing, but your opponent has built a very controlling deck, 5th Brigades, Churchills, and then they sweep you away with a carpet bombing, you know, you're going to have bad matchups. And sometimes you can't control what your matchups are. So this is kind of the ultimate crux of draft. Do I want to, in my opinion, you should be able to answer one question really, really well. And then that's what your identity of your deck is. That's what your game plan is. And it's not muddy and all over the place. But sometimes muddy and all over the place is the perfect answer to those kind of things. So like this is like kind of the ebb and flow, the push and pull of quadrant theory, is that, okay, we've identified these four areas. I either want to be really good at developing, I want to be really good when things kind of stall out and are at parity and I can take advantage of that and get past my opponent, I really want to catch up from behind, or I really want to just pound on my opponent and keep the pressure on them. You want to pick one of those lanes and have a plan according to one of those lanes. So during the draft, you can use this kind of idea to help you build your deck. It really helps you answer, what holes do I need to fill in my deck? If I am on the aggressive plan, if I'm doing something aggressive, I want to keep doing aggressive things. I don't need a Leopold. I don't need a Churchill. I don't need a Takasagi regiment. I don't need a Chinoo. I can just bypass those units and maybe just grab Mitu regiments and Akitas and just kind of overcommit. Well, not really overcommit, but really commit. I think that's probably a better way to put it. Really commit to this aggressive style, and I'm not going to let the game get past turn 8. That's my game plan. So you really want to be strong in, when you're making aggressive decks, you really want to be strong in either the developing stages of the game or when you're ahead in the game. So you kind of want to be able, that's where you're you want to be able to have A answers in those two quadrants, either developing or ahead. Those are aggressive decks. Mid-range is tricky. And frankly, most of the time in draft, most decks are some flavor of mid-range. So in mid-range, you kind of want to balance all four quadrants, but it's really difficult to balance all four of those quadrants. So I say, you know, you probably want to be pretty good at parity, and you probably want to be pretty good. You probably want to be like B plus in parity, and then like maybe like C minus in the other three quadrants to have a really good mid-range deck. It's so hard to talk about mid-range because it's like, it's all like, you're always playing mid-range in draft, at least. It kind of feels like you're always playing mid-range. So you either want to have cards that do fit across multiple areas, like that Panzer 4F2. That card fits in like all the different areas. It's good. I mean, it's not good in developing, but it's really good in when you're ahead. It's really good when you're behind, and it's really good at parity. So that's kind of like the ultimate mid-range card, is kind of that Panzer 4F2. I just want to reiterate that most draft decks fall in some, there's more aggressive mid-range and there's more controlling mid-range, but most of the time your stuff is going to fall in that mid-range area. And then finally, if you're drafting control, you don't care about being ahead all that much. So you don't have to worry about those aggressive Akita regiments and that kind of thing. You can just pass those by. You don't care about that. You even don't really care about parity that much because there's not going to be a lot of parity in a control game. You want to focus on stuff that's going to be good when you're behind and stuff that's good when developing to some extent. Because you don't want to... It's hard to play control in draft because you're all about answers and control. And in the other decks, they're all about asking questions. And it's way easier to ask more questions than it is to have answers in a limited card pool, if that makes sense. Like, there's only so much removal in a draft, and everybody wants the removal. But the control player really, really, really needs the removal. So you can easily run out of options in that regard. So in control, you want to have stuff that is really good when you're behind, is okay when you're at parity, and makes it so you don't fall too far behind when you're developing. And that combination can be hard to find. But again, like that Panzer 4F2 B17s, they go really well in mid-range and controlling decks, whereas stuff like Akitas, Mitus, Hayabusas, they go really well in aggressive decks. And I think you can kind of see, if you've played enough kind of constructed, you can kind of see where these different quadrants come into play. But I just want to give everybody kind of that 15-20 minute overview of quadrant theory and how it can affect what you decide to draft, how you decide to build your deck. And, you know, just to go over it one more time, just because it's kind of a new theory and newer players might not grasp it as easily, I'll give you like kind of a 2 minute overview. You have developing, parity, ahead, and behind. Those are kind of the four aspects of the game that we're saying exist in the game right now. And you want to be really good in like one or two of those. Like, it's really hard to be good in both ahead and behind. So that one doesn't really go all that well. But you really, really want to be good like when you're ahead and when you're developing, then you have an aggressive deck. If you're good when you're at parity or developing slash behind, you're probably a mid-range deck. And if you're really good at behind and kind of developing, then you're a control deck. And being able to recognize that when you're putting your deck together is important, because maybe later in the draft, it'll help you make decisions when it comes down to two cards that are really, really close and you have to make a call between which card you're going to put in your deck. So This is really theoretical and can be kind of hard to grasp, and you really got to kind of see it in action to really appreciate it. But I really encourage you to keep these questions and these ideas in mind when you're drafting your first decks. And then I guess that kind of leads us to our other part of our discussion today, is cards that affect the battlefield. Like, this is kind of like, if you don't know anything about draft, you've never really played any of these draft formats before, if you just stick to cards that affect the battlefield, you will probably end up in like a rock solid mid-range deck. And usually rock solid mid-range decks are good draft decks. So let me just go over kind of cards that affect the battlefield, and then you can kind of see, like, this is the kind of deck that is never going to be bad. You're never going to have a bad cards that affect the battlefield deck. So there's three major cards that affect the battlefield. Number one, and first and foremost, is units. Units are by far the most important card in a cards that affect the battlefield deck, because they go on the battlefield. Number two is removal. Hard removal, soft removal, any kind of removal is also cards that affect the battlefield card. Number three is buff orders. I am not as much of a fan of buff orders. You don't need that many in your deck, but they do affect the battlefield, and they can be very important. Two kinds of card types that you don't really need in a good cabs is what the shorthand is for cards that affect the battlefield. What you don't really need in a cabs deck is card draw or ramp. You don't really need those. You want maybe a little tiny bit of card draw, but you don't really need it. So here are kind of the tenets of cabs. And if you can hear my voice and you're getting into draft, and you've never drafted before, I would say follow these and you're going to be fine. If you follow these tips, you're going to be fine. So number one, have a good perf. And this helps you prioritize kind of that first four turns of the game that we're talking about with quadrant theory. That's why I did it in this order, is because CABS kind of comes out of quadrant theory. This is kind of an extension of quadrant theory, kind of the next level from quadrant theory. But your first tip for a good CABS deck is have a good curve. This will force you to focus on those first 4 to 6 turns of the game and drop just quality units there over and over and over again. And sometimes what happens in a game, especially with cards, is that you'll have turns where your opponent will pass and not do anything with a ton of credits, and they've left all these credits on the battlefield. And those credits, that equals either card draw or damage to HQ or unit damage. We did that whole another podcast a while ago. Well, actually, 2 podcasts devoted just to that idea. So you want to use up your credits as much as possible every time. So in a CABS deck, have a good curve, and then therefore you'll use your credits up all the time. The next step after having a good curve is you kind of want to avoid everything that's kind of 7 plus credits, unless it's an elite unit or something like a really important special unit like a Tiger or B-17, that kind of thing. If you're going to have something that costs 7 plus credits and it's going to chew up your entire turn, you better make sure that that unit is worth 7 plus credits. It would be better to actually play probably a removal order and a unit as opposed to a 7 plus kind of do-nothing unit. So you got to make those choices when you're drafting your deck. Number 3 is, since you only have a 40 card deck and there's no kind of mana system in cards, the credit system, you just get credits every time, you probably want to have at least half of your deck be units. At least 20 units in your deck, probably more, probably in the 22, 23, 24 maybe even range, because your deck's not going to get clogged up with lands like it does in Magic. So you either want to have lots of units that affect the battlefield or orders that affect the battlefield. So, and since units are so much more important than orders are in this style deck, more than half of your deck, I suggest, should be units of varying levels of strength, of varying deployment costs, but you want to have at least 20 units, I would suggest. Unless you're going super control and you want to have, you know, just like the uber end game with just giant bombs, you might be able to get away with less units. But for the most part, most players are going to want to have at least 20 units, probably in the 22, 23, 24 range, I would say. Next point I would give you is avoid build arounds. Avoid low impact countermeasure stuff, like I think like Ultra, you don't really want an Ultra in this kind of CABS deck. Maybe one interception, maybe some of the more elite or special German countermeasures you'd want. And you don't really need HQ defense so much. I think actually a good unit that kind of would fill that role is like a Baluch Regiment for the British, since it gives you a little bit of an HQ boost. Plus, it gives you a nice solid body on the battlefield. Like, that's a good unit because it's kind of doing this job for you. I think something like maybe a naval power is a good order because it affects the battlefield, but it also gives you an HQ boost. So you're not really worried about the HQ boost. Like, you're not in it for the HQ boost with those kind of cards. You're in it for either the body or the effect on the battlefield. The HQ boost is a bonus that you get off of those. I think that's important to keep in mind. Any HQ boosting should be bonus. It shouldn't be the only thing that you want. Build around stuff. I'm talking stuff like the reserves. Like, reserves is a tough, unless you get a critical mass of stuff like reserves and then frontal assaults or close combats or any of that kind of stuff, it's really difficult to build around those cards when there's only a limited selection in a draft. So I think you want to avoid, at least for your first couple of drafts, stuff like reserves or that kind of thing, because they're just too low impact. You want to be doing, well, let me get to some other things here. I think in these kind of cards that affect the battlefield state, you want to keep it really simple. You got to stick to low setup cost cards that are just good on their own. They don't need anything else really to help them be good. And then you want to focus on just using your units to go after the opponent's HQ. We don't need to be all fancy and doing all this crazy stuff. Keep it simple. And I think like stuff like the reserves or even kind of like burn decks and that kind of thing, those are kind of built around. They require critical masses of certain cards to work in synergistic forms. And there's only so many cards available in the pool at the table. So it could, unless you keep getting past reserve after reserve after reserve or air blitz after air blitz after air blitz, those cards, they require synergy to work together. And with these kind of cards that affect the battlefield kind of decks, you don't care about synergy. You want just good cards all amongst the curve. And that kind of leads my last point here. And this is almost directly from Marshall himself. You want to prioritize, I just quoted it. So let me just read this quote. Prioritize solid doubles over strikeout or home run cards. This means that you want cards that are consistently good rather than cards that are sometimes very good, but sometimes very bad. Let me just read that again. Prioritize solid doubles over strikeouts or home run cards. This means you want cards that are consistently good rather than cards that are sometimes very good and sometimes very bad. So reserves off the top can either be very, very good or very, very bad. Something like the War Machine, which is the ramp one that we talked about. That can either be very, very good if it's in your opening hand, but if you get it in the late game, it can be very, very bad. So I would rather have something like a 5th Marine Regiment or Panzer IV F2. It's always just a good card to have. I think something like naval support is another thing that you want to avoid in these CABS decks, at least in the early part of the draft. If you all of a sudden find that you have a lot of good defensive units, then maybe you throw one naval support in because it's kind of like a buff order, but you don't necessarily want your whole deck to be built around naval support right from the get-go, because sometimes you won't get the payoffs for that. So I think you want to just be careful when you're making those decisions. So I'll put all of these different areas and questions and that kind of thing in the show notes for this week. I think I've droned on long enough for you guys to get the point here a little bit. But those are kind of, you know, either quadrant theory or, and then coming out of quadrant theory is this kind of CABS idea of like, I'm always going to be doing something solid and positive and good, but that comes out of the quadrant theory of understanding the different areas of the game. So if I understand the different areas of the game, then I can always make a solid deck, and that's going to give me the best opportunity to win most often. You might not be able to always go undefeated or spike everything all the time, but over the long, long term, you will always have kind of a rock solid deck that's based in this quadrant theory idea. So you take the quadrant theory, and that leads to the cards that affect the battlefield or the CABS idea. So those are the kind of two areas just to help new people who maybe are more constructive players and haven't drafted very often, or, you know, have never even heard a draft before, or just want to try it out or see how it goes. You know, those are just kind of some tips and tricks that I have just been going over in my mind that I just wrote up in the sheet this week and just want to drop in there. But if you go to cardspodcast.com, I'll put the quadrant theory kind of breakdown and questions, and then I'll also put the kind of tenets of cards that affect the battlefield on the website. So you can have that handy as well. I know it's been a really theoretical kind of podcast this week as opposed to kind of solid, like this card, here's what I think about it. But I think that's good because draft is going to be a new frontier kind of for the game. So I think it's good to at least have some tenets in place when you get started with that. And that finally leads me to we'll close up the show here with just some programming notes and that kind of thing. The Cards Podcast is going on vacation for season 4 of the game. That would be the month of July. I'm just going on vacation. There are a few things that are going into this decision here. Number one is just from the streaming point of view. We're just having some tech issues with the computer and the connection and that kind of stuff. And can get really frustrating to kind of start a stream and then it go down and everybody's asking questions, where'd the stream go? It's just being a nightmare right now. So I'm getting stuff looked at and we're going to check that stuff out and just make sure everything's good to go on the tech side of things. So that'll just free up some time to just get those things done and not be under, it's not really pressure, but just under the idea that every week, oh, we got to do all these different things. It's like, no, let's just take some time off and figure this stuff out and get it done so we can come back. So that's number one. Number two on why I need a vacation right now is between the two accounts and all the video editing and the writing and the podcasting and all that different and coordinating and just doing all these different things. I have about, maybe 800 or so, maybe 900 hours or so devoted into the game itself. And I'm not complaining or trying to humble brag or anything like that. I'm just saying, like, I just want to be straightforward and honest. That's a lot of time that I've dedicated to a single game and a single set of cards. And I just need some time to just kind of take a break and just take a step back and just refresh a little bit. I still love the game. I really like it. I like all the different things. I mean, I just talked for 40 minutes about draft game theory with you here. So it's not from a lack of enjoyment of the game. It's just when you put that amount of time into something in a very short amount of overall time, you know, you can just feel that burnout a little bit. And I just want to just take a step back and refresh and that kind of thing. And that kind of leads into point three. Personally, I think I feel personally that I've explored a lot of the different aspects of the game that I really enjoy and I really like. But now that I've explored those aspects, you know, there's not a lot of ground I haven't covered that I haven't wanted to cover. There's some ground that I haven't covered that I'm kind of not as enthused about. And when I was out walking with Mrs. Podcast and the dogs last night after the stream, kind of the tech went haywire and everything, you know, I was telling her about the stream. I was telling her about different decks that I had made recently. And she said, it just sounds like you're not having as much fun as you used to. And I was like, that's why she's Mrs. Podcast. Because it's true. I'm just not having as much fun. And if it's a game, you know, the number one thing that I'm here for, and I hope most of everybody else is here for, is having fun and enjoying our time playing the game, thinking about the game, working on the game. And when you cross that barrier or that line of it's not as fun as it used to be, or it's not as not that much fun right now, then I think that's a good opportunity to say, okay, if you're not having as much fun, take a step back, kind of collect yourself, let things refresh, and you know, not be as stale, and just kind of just get a breath of fresh air. Let the dev team work on the draft mode and that kind of thing. And let's take some time off, and then we can come back fresh and ready and excited again, and work and play and have fun again. So those three kind of things working together just kind of led me to the conclusion, like, you know what? It's the middle of summer. The weather's nice. I want to go do stuff on this podcast. We have some camping trips set up. 4th of July is coming up here in the States. So there's lots of, you know, there's things going on. I think July is a good opportunity to just take a step back from everything for, like, just like kind of like detoxify for a little bit. Not that anything's toxic. I'm just saying that that's the term. It's just kind of just like let things kind of refresh and figure themselves out. And now I just want to say thank you to all of our patrons and all of our subscribers and everything like that. And, you know, to those people who have, you know, financially dedicated to keeping stuff up and running, everything will stay up and running and available. So all the content, all the video, all the podcasts will still remain up and available to whoever wants to use them, whoever wants to look at them, whoever wants to listen, all that kind of stuff. So you're not losing any content. Just for the month of July, you're not going to be gaining any content. So for subscribers and patrons and that kind of thing, I just wanted to be honest with everybody. And it's up to you. Everybody who has financially supported everything we're working on so far is So I'm so thankful to everybody who's done that. But if, you know, with this kind of announcement, you feel like, ah, you know what, I'm going to just take those donations back and I'm going to, you know, go on and support other things or other content, that's totally fine. I totally get it. There's no hard feelings or anything like that. And there, all I can say is thank you for the support I've gotten so far. So, but at the same time, I just want to be honest that, like, I just need a little bit of time to kind of refresh and re-examine and, you know, just get back in a place where it's like, you know, you're super excited to get back into the game. And right now, it just doesn't have that excitement level for me. And I think for people, especially for those who are supporting this endeavor, I think I owe you that kind of excitement level. And I think I can get that excitement level back. I think I just need to take a step back for a little bit. So we're taking season four off. Or we're just taking season four off, and just want to let everybody know that now, and then you know, everybody can move forward from there. But I hope this week with the talk about quadrant theory and the cards that affect the battlefield stuff, I hope that'll help guide some people in the beginnings of draft whenever that comes online. Hopefully, by the time you're hearing my voice, hopefully we will have some more information about that, or by the time we talk again, hopefully we'll have some videos up and maybe some stuff of some drafts happening. So that's kind of the state of where we stand right now, and I just want to say thank you to all of our patrons and all of our supporters on the stream. That's twitch.tv/cardspodcast, and then Patreon is patreon.com/cardspodcast. Like I said, all of our content will remain exactly where it is. The bills are paid for a little while, for a year, so don't worry about that. If you want to get involved in that manner, you're totally cool to do so. If you want to pull back a little bit in light of the recent announcement, totally cool to do that too. No worries, no hard feelings, don't worry about it. Everything's cool. Just want to let everybody know that that's where things are. So this one will get up and out there. And thanks for joining us today. We got the Patreon, the stream we've been talking about. We got the Twitter. We're on Reddit most of the time. We're on Discord. And then finally, if you have any other feedback or any ideas, or maybe you want to share some of your own content, then we can display on the website. Just email. Email is the best way to do it. cardspodcast@gmail.com. But that's going to do it for this week, everybody. Thank you to all of our supporters. And we will talk to you either soon, depending on when you're listening to this, or at probably once draft mode gets going. So we'll talk to you soon. And we'll see you on the battlefield.